So let's go around the room, starting in Las Vegas and at our new beautiful facility for the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, and say your name so that Jamie can write down what you are.
Good afternoon, Judge. Drew Christensen, Park County Appointed Counsel Program.
Fran Forsman.
John Lambros.
Phil Cohn.
Christopher Lawley, Clark County DA's Office.
Jeff Wells.
David Sheik.
Hans Jessup, AOC.
Reno.
Patrick Flanagan. Jerry Mosler.
Chris Hicks.
And Jennifer Lund.
Can't see Reno.
They're on the phone, Chief.
Oh, they're on the phone?
Yep.
Can you guys hear that? Can you guys turn it up at all?
Can you repeat from Washoe County, please?
Sure. It's Chief Judge Flanagan, Jeremy Bosler, Chris Hicks, and Jennifer Luntz. And we apologize, our video isn't working today, so we'll just be on audio.
And this is Carson City, Chief Justice Michael Cherry.
Yeah, Ben Graham.
John McCormick.
Michelle Resnick. Jamie Graddick.
Brother Sill.
Lucy Crowe. Karen Krasnick.
Diane Roth.
And Bradley and Lucy are my externs for this summer. Bradley goes to Louisiana State University, and he's a Tiger, as I was at the University of Missouri, and as a Chief Justice. And Lucy Crowe, who is at Boyd Law School. And both of them are nice enough to work here with me and my law clerks and my staff. And I wanted to invite him to learn a little bit about engine defense.
Now we have people. Kevin Higgins on the phone from Spark. Mason Simon is also on the phone from Elko.
Kristen Hill from Elko.
David Carroll, Sixth Amendment Center.
Okay, David's been our consultant.
Joey Eastley in Tonopah. Anyone else on the phone?
Jim Shirley from the 11th.
Thank you. Anyone else? We do have a forum.
Okay. Skip public comment. I don't think there's anybody other than people who were involved in the Defense Commission that are present. So we'll do public comment at the very end of the meeting. Approval of the meeting summary. Is there a motion to approve the meeting summary prepared by our right hand and left hand, Jeff Jamie Granick?
I'll move.
So moved.
I'll second.
Second by Rachel. All those in favor, so going to say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None? Okay. We're going to come back to SB 377 towards the end. Let's go with an update on caseload standards. Mr. Jessup, how are we doing on that? We got any idea of caseload standards?
We're doing really, as far as the caseload standards that we received, we've been getting pretty complete reports from everybody. There's a few courts that have reported in the past that we haven't had information from so far this fiscal year. And so as you look at that report, if that represents your court or your organization, we'd appreciate you looking at your statistics and forwarding those on if you can. As one of the things that we noticed overall is that there's seems to be an increase in adjudications being reported or cases that have been reported as being disposed or closed, and that's up significantly from previous years. And so I don't know, we're going to be looking into that, whether that's just an increase in efficiency of reporting or whether there's something going on with some type of administrative closures or going through and cleaning up caseloads. In addition, you can see so far we're on track as far as new appointments from last fiscal year to increase roughly 10,000 for this fiscal year. And we're on track to exceed that once we get a couple other court statistics. So we're looking to improve some of our data reporting and find out what some of these trends are looking at. And we'll hopefully have that for you in the next meeting.
Chief Justice?
Thank you, Hans. Thank you.
This is Franny. I asked Hans before the meeting started. It's not clear whether or not these numbers include appointed cases through, for instance, Drew's office or Bob Bell's office. So what we've suggested is that those two offices make sure that Hans gets that data. Obviously, in those counties that don't have a public defender, it must be their contract lawyers that are reporting in. So.
Drew, you take care of that?
Yeah, I talked to Hans before the meeting, Justice, and I'll make sure to provide our numbers for the last couple of fiscal years.
And Hans, you'll follow through with Bob Bell from Reno?
Yep, I will.
And I guess my one question is when you say it's going to be 10,000 cases up, would that primarily be due to just increased reporting?
And that's what we're going to have to look at, okay, as far as the trends. Is it improvement in reporting, or is there an actual trend going on here that we're going to look at? You can see in this report, all I have is two fiscal years currently, the 2016 and 2017. Mm-hmm. The current fiscal year, 2017, we're down 10,000 from where we expect we're going to be because of some of those courts that aren't reporting. Yeah. So once we get that information in there, then we expect, you know, an increase in the reports and what we're going to see. So we want our biggest thing that we're looking at is right now the total cases disposed. That's where we see the actual jump, some trend that we can probably look at. The filing trend is probably going to be more related to actual
increase in the number of cases disposed means more guilty pleas, less trials, I guess.
Yeah, and we can look at that. We can look at that as it relates to our USGR statistics to see if that holds.
Let's move on to status update on indigent defense in Clark County. Public Defender Phil Cohn.
Yeah, I'm just going to vent a minute. It's not this committee's call. At least we haven't made it such. I'm on Justice Hardesty's commission about bail, and I can tell you we're nowhere. We had a case today with a 19-year-old who's in high school, D-felony, no priors, and he came in after posting $3,000 bail, and the judge threw him back in jail for $15,000. We're nowhere on this, and that's why our caseloads are what they are, and I'm hoping someone will at some point sue the courts, because that's the only way we're going to resolve this. Other than that, I got nothing to report.
Phil, is that a pilot court with the evidence-based?
No.
It's just a bail schedule thing, you think?
It was just a judge who didn't like, it was a third-degree arson, and a judge who just doesn't like that and decided this is something that she's going to really punish. And so he's back in jail, even though he showed up to court with $15,000 bail, and he's missing his high school finals. And that's where we are down here.
Phil, have you run into a post-bail in justice court, and then they go and indict him, and you get up to district court, the district court judge then raises the bail on the same charge?
Yes.
We've run into that also. I don't understand why the district court judge would set a higher bail than the justice of the peace would.
It's ripe for a federal lawsuit, and that's all I'm going to say. And I know that Justice Hardesty is doing everything he can to try to bring this along, and we're nowhere.
I did hear Freddie's question. Is this part of the pilot project, or is it available?
No.
So he was not interviewed by any pretrial service?
Oh, yeah, of course he was. Yeah, he was, because they've always done that, and they still do. But they didn't use the tool. But the fact is, I mean, our lawyer was there, his mother was there, ready to take him, explain that he's in high school, he had no priors, and he showed up on his own. That is the state of OR and bail in Southern Nevada.
Was there asked for an evidentiary hearing and findings made by the judge?
Well, there's a pretty long argument. I don't know that there were findings made. I'm just looking. It happened this morning, Your Honor, and so I'm just looking at what's in the computer right now.
Well, you know what I say about getting a shirt done in Carson City. Can't do it in a day, but there's certain things that can be done in a day. I will say no more.
Okay. But no, I think so. I think the court can make an order that courts are going to follow this, but we're not there yet.
Ben?
Yeah, Chief Justice and members, as some of you know, there was a modest bail, quite frankly, AB 136 that passed out of the legislature, again, kind of suggesting, I don't want to say a gentler, but a more intelligent approach to bail, and that was vetoed by the governor. So you're going to see, you know, from one standpoint, I hope that the pilot program down there does demonstrate that it's effective, because because, again, it's almost all these situations where you're going to have judicial input to get this done. But it'll be interesting to see how that develops between now and the next session.
Ben,
Phil, is there anything happening with the Dream Team as far as capital murder and murder cases? The judge's Dream Team?
You know, I really don't know. I don't think they start till July 1st, right?
July 1st.
Yeah, July 1st.
Justice, this is David Sheik. It starts July 1st, and what we've come across is a number of judges that aren't the Dream Team judges just continuing their murder trials till after July 1st and sending them all to Doug Herndon.
Well, I was in court yesterday, and I did see a judge yelling at a lawyer about asking for a continuance, so that's probably the start of the program, don't you think?
But to go back a step, I mean, Ben, I do know that it was vetoed, and that's why I'm saying the only thing that is going to change the system is litigation. It is won everywhere. It's not going to lose. It's won in every federal court. I think that the courts are very unwise in Nevada to leave it up to the federal judges, but I'm good with that.
Well, just a heads up to Phil and to David, tomorrow there's going to be a new judge sworn in who has a little experience in capital murder, probably the only one of that, if he was on a member of the Dream Team, that actually represented people in capital murder cases over about a 30-year period. But that's up to the chief judge. We decided your chief judge in the 8th District, strong chief justice rules would allow what's taking place with the Dream Team. So the Supreme Court decided not to intervene at all. But I just thought you'd have a heads up that Brother Bayless will be, in fact, he was sworn in today by Judge Gonzalez, and I'll be doing his investiture on Friday. Dave, have you got anything going on with Special Public Defender's Office?
Well, we're continuing to expand by taking the Category A cases. We're coming along at a pretty good clip on those. I think Drew has some numbers that we're going to probably end up taking about 190 to 200 Category A cases that normally would be court-appointed counsel. And so we've been taking those since January 1st. So, no, we're coming right along, Justice. The murder case.
Drew, how are you doing? How are you doing on appointed counsel?
Doing well, Judge. To back up what David said, we're happy to announce that the numbers that we're seeing David Sheik's office receiving is about what we anticipated with our statistical analysis to have the office go that way in the first place. So we have 6 months of data. We'll look at the next 6 months of the calendar year and make some determinations on whether even to expand their office further from just the Category A's. Right now we're kind of on track, and so I think that's been a significant movement of what we've done down here in Clark County to institutionalize those Category A felonies.
And in the meantime, the murder rate continues to climb, so we're more than busy on our murder cases.
And Judge, I should say I'm well aware of the new Judge Bayless, because I had to reassign about 20 murder cases or 20 cases that your former partner was on our appointed panel, so we had to reassign all those, so that was fine.
My advice to him is do all civil. In case he gets an opponent. Is there any other information from DeClaire County? Jeff Wells, or the DA, or Chris, any other information that you know about Clark County criminal justice?
We've been spending quite a bit of time looking at ways to reinvent, if you will, our arraignment process in Clark County, how we bring cases into the criminal justice system with an eye toward reducing jail population. A big piece of that is the Nevada pretrial release tool. We've taken site visits to Maricopa County and to San Antonio. Both of those have very robust intake services systems. In San Antonio, they have approximately 71 in their pretrial system. In Maricopa County, they've got about 90. And the real beauty of those systems is that everybody agrees, you know, your murderers, your rapists, those individuals who are involved in serial robberies, those folks need to be in custody to protect the community. Everybody agrees, you know, your first-time offenders, low-level offenders, they ought to be out on OR. It's the individuals in the middle, perhaps this gentleman here that Phil referenced today, you know, is there a way to get that individual out so that he's you know, taken finals, but in a way that can protect the community? And there certainly is, and there's a way to do it to satisfy prosecutors, perhaps to satisfy the court, and that's with a robust pretrial system that can, you know, maybe electronically monitor him, if that's appropriate. Of course, I don't know anything about this case. Maybe it's, I don't know if there's drugs involved. Maybe it's to do some drug testing. Maybe it's to do a home visit. Maybe it's to make sure he is in school, taking his finals like he should. But it's that large group of individuals in the middle that could and should be placed back out in the community, because all the statistics show that there's a low recidivism rate, or a lower recidivism rate, if those folks are out in the community and not incarcerated. And so the challenge for us is to make that sort of a system work, to bring our jail population down, and to intake people in a more efficient manner, to do it more around the clock than we're doing it now, to do it on weekends. And so that really is our challenge in the justice community here in Southern Nevada moving forward. So that's kind of what's happening on our end.
Who's working on that, Chris?
All of the justice partners. So the Public Defender's Office is involved. Mr. Wells over here is involved. We're obviously involved. Metro is very involved.
Is the municipal court a part of it at all?
Yes. Muni Court, Las Vegas Muni is involved. So really all of the players down here are moving in that direction.
Okay, let's move on to the Reno folks. Jeremy, what's going on in Washoe?
Thank you, Justice. First of all, I'm not sure what our last meeting was, but the county has announced that budgeting will be flat for this year, so that any additional resources, court services officers, public defenders, alternate public defenders, and resources are going to be waiting for the next budget. That impacts the public defender's office in a way. As I explained at the last meeting, we've had a fivefold increase in volunteer commitment cases over the last 3 years. So now we have 1.5 attorneys handling 2,500 involuntary commitment cases. The maximum recommended case was 200 per attorney per year. Something's going to have to give in the public defense system. Also, as I mentioned at the last meeting, we had Professor Kagan from UNLV come up and do an audit of our immigration services, and we were found to be lacking in our PDEA compliance, and one of the budget requests we asked of the county was to add resources so we could beef up our PDEA compliance. And again, with a flat budget, that's not going to be happening easily. We may have to reorganize or shed some cases, make that happen. In regard to Phil's comments, our pretrial experience has been a little bit different than Clark County's. We still have lots of variety amongst judges. Some judges do have different behaviors and predilections. We are still struggling to get the risk assessments given to the defense attorneys by the time of the first appearance. But we've also had an increase, well, the good and bad. We've had, on the good side, an increase in releases, OR releases by the court before the first appearance. A lot of low-risk offenders. We still are tracking an increase in cash bails imposed. We're not quite sure what is behind that increase in cash bails. So it's been kind of a mixed bag. I think our jail population has gone down. to a small extent, but by no means is the pretrial system operating consistent with what you see maybe in Maricopa or the District of Columbia or some other statewide systems. And to Mr. Jessup's comments, we're happy to give him any data he needs to help track caseloads, and we're just curious about what the next step is. Once we get the data, what is the court's next step to figure out what is an adequate, reasonable caseload for defense counsel? So that's it for me.
Jen?
Jennifer Lent, also from the Commissioner's Office. I would echo what Jeremy said about the bail hearing. One thing that's different, however, in Washoe County is that when they initiated the risk assessment, they did away with the bail schedule because they wanted to have a true count of who was going to be impacted. The problem with that is that judges that are then setting bail that they deem appropriate, and they can be as high as $10,000 cash only on non-violent misdemeanors even. So that's been an issue in Washoe County that we're dealing with. As far as we're going to be meeting next month, so I think near the end of June on the change in the criminal process, it's had a pretty big impact on the DAs, the PDs, and the APD's office in the way we assign cases. We don't assign them now by court department. We have to assign them on a rotational basis. So that's causing a lot of, you know, running around in the court. But we're meeting on that next month. And as far as the APD's office, there are 13 therapeutic courts now in Washoe County that we're covering. I think Jeremy and Chris and I have all seen an uptick in the criminal cases as well. But other than that, things are going swimmingly. We're having a change in county management up here. Kevin Schiller, who's been the assistant county manager and a participant in this commission, is going to Clark County. And then some within the next year, I'll be retiring as well. So there are changes on that front.
I wasn't sure about this.
Your face is here as well.
In Washoe, how's the appointed counsel working out? I guess Bob isn't there?
Bob is not here. He had another engagement. He has been working on a month-to-month contract. I believe it's going to be put out to bid again in July to see if we'll be staying with Bob Bell or if the county is going to go with somebody else, but that has not yet been decided.
Let me have David Carroll answer the question that that Jeremy raised about once we get the information about caseload standards. What do we do with that, David? Where do we go next after that?
It really depends on what the information shows. I mean, we can do a quick analysis against national standards, but also there's been a lot of individual state caseload standards being developed through time tracking, which are really changing how people are thinking about the national standards. So I think the next step is once we get them to do a thorough analysis of where it stands in relation to other jurisdictions, and then look to what needs to be done specifically in your state.
Okay. Yuri, how about state public defender?
Our office has been extremely busy as of late. We've got 3 murder trials set between now and the end of the year. We've seen an increase in general and violent crime. Our current staff is in trial prep and motion work, and everybody's a little stressed out, but we didn't get an increase in our budget either, so we're going to make do with our current staff. I've noticed our specialty courts are especially being overcrowded at this point, to the point where we've stopped accepting people for our mental health court due to funding issues, which is really a shame because we're identifying more and more people whose criminal behavior is driven by mental health, yet we're limited in our ability to help them. So we're referring them either to other specialty courts, which aren't going to directly address the problem, or we're just simply asking them to comply with terms of probation when we know they can't comply, so they're just a revolving door in and out of the jail.
How's the appellate section doing as far as appeals, not only in the Carson City area, but also throughout the rurals?
Well, we don't handle any other appeals than our 2 counties, Carson and Story. I know right now we've got one attorney completely dedicated to appellate, and she feels completely overwhelmed because she's got all of her trial attorneys that are working much harder, preparing much more appellate work for her. So We're working hard.
Why did I get the idea that you were going to take over? Was that just part of the SD?
30 years.
For a while, didn't you, Karen, didn't you do some of the appellate work in other jurisdictions?
We've only done appellate work for counties who employ the state public defender.
Yeah.
There's been discussion of our office taking on the burden, but it's never been done. And it was discussed in SB 377.
Do judges, did any of the rule judges ever call you and ask you to take an appeal?
On occasion they do.
And you take it?
No. We're not contracted. We're not statutorily able to take it.
You can't charge them and put it in your...
Well, it's difficult in our budget structure because it's funded county per county. So if I do it with current staff, I'm taking money from Carson, we need to fund another county's appeal. And they get a little grumpy.
All right. So we know we got a problem there, too, because I was under the impression that you were going to be doing the appeals throughout the state. I thought maybe that was part of this.
And they never did accept the budget you had, the contract.
It would be an amazing budgetary problem, because we'd be taking money from existing counties and collecting money from other counties based on yet-to-be-determined rates.
That's been discussed quite a bit by the rural contract attorneys got their backs up over it. They didn't... They saw that as a foot in the door, and they didn't want anybody else handling their cases.
I definitely don't want the state public defender to do what the statute says they're supposed to do, to represent the rules.
Well, I don't know. This is Judge Young. I joined you late. I'm not sure what rural attorneys you're talking about, but I haven't seen that objection. I know most of the attorneys here in the 9th JD would be delighted to have someone else do the appeals. So unless you can tell me what jurisdiction or what judicial district the rural attorneys wanted to hang on to their appeals because they didn't want anybody touching their cases, I haven't heard of that.
Humboldt County, Lyon County. If you want the list, I'll compile it.
It's something we'll have to look into if we continue the IDC as it is. It's something that we can take a look at as to the appellate practices throughout the state. Okay, I think it was in Washoe.
Yeah, I think the attorneys here would be delighted to have someone else do the appeals.
That's how it was when I was a public defender. That's how more guys ended up leaving the office. As soon as they lost the number of trials and added with their appeals, it was bye-bye in the private practice.
I think that...
Let's have our postmortems with Ben Graham and John McCormick. First of all, I want to thank both of them for their tireless work in this quest. This is like the postmortem before at the end, and then we'll come to my place. So Ben, it's all yours.
It's only 2:30, so we have plenty of time.
Yeah, Chief Justice, I've got a thought here that I've actually spent several days with together, which doesn't mean very good, but I'd like to say what I want to say, and then, you know, John participated and was there, and you were there, Franny and John were there, so we can kind of have a discussion now. Here's a reflection on and David Carroll as well. You know, SB 377. It's interesting. I went back and opened up my computer, and there was discussion of the sewer issues.
It's ridiculous.
Dated 2015 and 2013. There was not going to be a hearing on SB 377 because it did not appear that there was enough support to get it through the legislature. But the feeling was that with the Chief Justice and Senator Sigerblum and others that it deserved a hearing and the issue needed to be put on the plate. And that's what happened. And Chief Justice, Senator Sigerblum, John Lambrow, Franny, Forsman, David Carroll, John McCormick, and others spent many hours drafting legislation, preparing for the hearings, and testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee and then the Senate Finance Committee. There were meetings with leadership, staff, supporters, and opponents. This past Saturday afternoon, the Chief Justice, along with John McCormick, myself, met with the Finance Chair, Senator Joyce Woodhouse, the Chief Financial Officer for the Legislative Council, Mark Compati, and a staffer who had been assigned to 377 and was extremely thorough and knowledgeable of all aspects of proposed legislation. With that, and those were positive signs. But in reality, there really was no good news, which was extremely disappointing, taking into account the legislative makeup and the leadership. From the makeup and leadership, you would assume that there would be a significant support stepping up and creating and funding a process to meet the constitutional challenge of indigent defense. No, and not a surprise. Looking back at history 150 years ago, and even today, many jurisdictions, we have seen, how many jurisdictions have we really seen step up to the plate with legislative action without pressure from the judiciary? This commission has unchallenged expertise for the issues surrounding indigent defense. The capabilities are unexceeded. You've studied, gathered facts, information, supports your recommendations. You've told the court, the prosecution, the defense, legislative bodies, including county commissions, what is required by federal and state constitutional and case law. You have made it abundantly clear that unless steps are taken to meet the constitutional requirements, this state will face lengthy and costly litigation. Where has it gotten us with the legislative process? We were excited to look to our sister state to the north as their legislature created an Indigent Defense Commission up in Idaho, then saddened when litigation was necessary to make it clear that indigent defense must be adequately funded, and that is a state obligation. Look at our own statutory scheme creating the state public defender in Nevada. Surely that would give us hope that the legislature acknowledged our state's obligation to adequately provide indigent defense. The statute is clear and unambiguous. What became of that bold effort? The legislature holds the purse strings. Studies, caseloads, flat fee contracts, clear violation of due process and equal protection have seldom caused the loosening of these purse strings. I will not go into what would be needed for legislative fix. This session, we are as close as we likely will ever be in this lifetime with the makeup of that body. There's no good news. Your Indigent Defense Commission should not gauge success or failure based upon whether or not the legislature enacts the commission anticipated in SB 377. Much has been learned and accomplished. I would truly love to get a realization by this state that indigent defense is a state obligation and get the state funding that has been carried all these years by the county. I'd be glad to share with each of you on any of your questions and thoughts. There's been discussion over and over again about studies and legislative commissions. It's fairly common in the legislative process, and we've learned over the last 25 or 30 years, that when there is an aggressive legislator with a meritorious cause that cannot muster the votes to get it through the body and to the governor, mainly because of fiscal notes, to send the major off to a study. The snag is that there's seldom funding for any of the study, and the matter is simply languages. Now, as noted, massive participation from John, hours and hours and hours with the various stakeholders to draft legislation that could be agreed upon. And Justice Terry, he made the effort to go and to help understand what was going on. And like I say, I've had discussion with dozen legislators, had meetings with some judges, with prosecutors and defense attorneys, and the issues are massive. And I don't really see, and I'm sure glad if it were to happen, to see a legislative fix to these to this issue. And that's basically my sentiment, Mr. Chief Justice, and I hope that I haven't upset anybody, and like I say, I sure would like to see it happen. But from a legislative standpoint, I just don't see it.
John McCormick, would you like to add?
Yeah, if I can follow on to that, when we had our meeting with
the chair and her staff on Saturday, I kind of pounded on the recent Idaho State Supreme Court decision that I think has been sent out to everybody, and there was not sort of any acknowledgement of the fact that Idaho had set up a commission and was still being sued in the case had been reinstated. So it was, I don't know that there is at this stage much receptiveness in many quadrants of the legislature. I mean, Senator Sagerblom did all he could this session to help us with it, but I think the broader will to address this is not there, and I think it has a lot to do with money and the state's resources and the funding priorities this session. So.
And note that there isn't a, John did prepare an amendment with a fiscal vote, and as we sent it over.
Yeah, it went over yesterday.
And, I don't know if anything will happen with it. We don't think anything will happen.
And the amendment that was prepared yesterday was basically the thing that we had got the sense would be the only thing they would consider, and it's creating the Indigent Defense Commission or the Nevada Rights Council Commission and then charging it with carrying out another study, and then we attach what funding would be necessary. But I think even if the relatively de minimis amount of funding, it's not going to fly.
Well, let me open it up for discussion. I'll start with my right hand. Franny, you did wondrous.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that we couldn't accomplish.
Yeah, well, I guess I agree with David is that I, you know, the pats on the back right now are not helping. I guess I'm confused. I thought the last email that I saw was that the fiscal note for the commission was going to be done, that you had the information. We had worked on it a few weeks ago. And but instead, is what you're saying, John McCormick, that what was the amendment was just to create a study and funding for the study?
That was the last ditch amendment. Prior to the hearing in finance, I did put together some cost projections, and not much note, like as far as what the state share, projected share going forward would be, and there was not a ton of attention paid to that. Partially, the legislature always says it's reluctant to require a future legislative body to spend money, but we did provide the cost projections for Senate Bill 377, and we had the hearing in finance, and quite frankly, that hearing was a little bit disheartening for me. It was made fairly clear that they didn't want to hear my three pages of ramblings.
The other thing that came up in the meeting on Saturday was that I heard that unless you get the executive buy-in and an executive on board, we weren't going very far. And sitting through hearings for the last number of years, when you get down to finances, if it doesn't say GovRec, you're pretty well shot unless it's a pork barrel project somewhere in somebody's district. And that happens in the dark hours of June 5.
John Lambros?
Thank you, Chief. And before I start, I just want to thank David Carroll for all of the hard work he did on helping us get where we are so far. And thank John McCormick for the work that he did. Kind of at the last minute before our presentation in front of Senate Senator Woodhouse, and unfortunately we probably could have been a little bit more prepared, but John did a great job presenting what minor fiscal impact the bill was going to have. I disagree a lot with a lot of what Ben just said, because it I don't think it accurately depicts what we've been through the last 10 years in terms of the process. You know, where we made a mistake, and I'm not going to say anything that everybody else doesn't know, either intuitively or have come to learn through the process, and that is we should have done at the beginning of this, certainly before this legislative session, what David Carroll asked us to do and recommended that we do, and that is put together the kind of commission that Justice Hardesty did with his Criminal Justice Commission, his Criminal Justice Committee, include players from all branches of state government. This reminds me a lot of the kind of appellate practice that I used to have, and I won't tell you in front of which court that was, but I would know the record quite well and think I had a very good argument, but the court in which I appeared in front of didn't seem to share the same knowledge of the record and the argument that the advocates did. I think that was the problem that we had with the legislators, both in the Senate and in the Assembly. Not with the leadership. The leadership, Jason Frierson, Aaron Ford, Senator Segerbloom, they all understood the merits of our position, but they weren't institutionalized the way we are, and because of the way that we've gone through this. Certainly we've had minority positions with regard to Senate Bill 377. One was voiced by the District Attorneys Association, based primarily on the Idaho case that was at the time a district court decision that had since subsequently been reversed. Again, I'm just going to give you my opinion on why NACO was not more strong than neutral. And in my opinion, I think that NACO did not take a positive supporting position with regard to our bill because they were concerned that one or two counties might pull out of NACO if they were to take a positive affirmative position. So again, other than what I would characterize as inconsequential gadflies, the institutional composition of this commission was very supportive of the legislation that we presented in the Judiciary Committee. And the Judiciary Committee, I think in some ways Ben may have unfairly characterized that presentation, the Judiciary Committee was very receptive, not because they were a friendly committee because Senator Segerbloom was the chair, but because they understood the problem, because some of those members of that committee, including Republicans, understood the problem of the Sixth Amendment quandary that we are in the state of Nevada by shifting the blame and the responsibility and the financial burden unconstitutionally to the political subdivisions as opposed to the state. Clark, Washoe, and Douglas can bear that cost, and so can Elko, but I know that Elko's starting to feel that burden. But the way the statutory schematic is put together now, counties under 100,000 people, save and except for the wealthier counties in our state, are getting unconstitutionally screwed. That wouldn't have been a difficult argument to make to the players in this room and to men and women like the leadership in the current current legislature. Speaker Frierson, Senate Majority Leader Ford. They understand it. They're lawyers. They get what we're talking about. They're really sad.
They don't.
Well,
I went over the first of the session. But I just want to tell you, and they don't understand because they're not. They haven't been in the trenches like you and I have been.
And
they have no idea what we're talking about.
That's my point, Chief. And I think going forward, unless a court somewhere decides this question as opposed to a legislature, going forward, my advice to this commission would be to bring the more political players into the people who serve in the legislature the way that Justice Hardesty's committee did. And I bear a lot of the responsibility for not making that suggestion 2 years ago, and I'm sorry I didn't, because I think, Chief, I totally agree with you. I think that we fell on deaf ears, but it's because their minds were made up. I mean, I get this process. It's depressing. I'm not a lobbyist. I'm not, Tom DeLay or Jack Abramson. I'm just a lawyer. I don't know how to do this kind of stuff. And it was really disheartening for me to see the way the process works when you have a really meritorious position. And to me, it speaks for itself. So, Senator Goicoechea asked some very good questions, I thought. And his concern, and he's on Senate Finance, his concern is that, if we were to fund this, which I think personally, in my opinion, would be much extremely beneficial to his constituents, and I can't imagine why he would vote against it. His concern is, well, you know, you say our fees are going to be capped, but what's going to happen in the next session? You know, and that's a fair question to ask. But my sense of the way the things work in the legislative process is it's a lot easier to get something than to take something away. And, you know, I may be wrong in terms of the way the federal, or the, excuse me, the state public defender's office got screwed throughout the 1980s and 90s, but I would just think that if we could have beaten this horse to the gate before a federal or state lawsuit was filed, we could have done it correctly rather than having the oversight of a federal or state judge acting as a receiver of our indigent defense process in the rural counties of Nevada, and I think we failed. I'm sorry that we did. I think we had the argument on the merits. I think we came up with a bill through the rural judge's help, and you know, those judges like Judge Kaysen and Judge Smedlemilk and Judge Fairman and Judge Young deserve a lot of credit for making the bill that David and I first drafted a lot better, a lot more responsive to not only the economic needs of the county, but the county's needs to ensure that they have some vestige of control over the quality of representation that's going to be delivered in their county. And I really thought, and shame on me because I'm 63 years old and I've been on this damn committee for 10 years now, I really thought we put together a pretty darn...
Hi, John.
It's okay. I know that's Judge Young down there laughing.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I really thought we had a pretty good package put together. So I'm just saying that if we do this again, and we're talking about this 2 years from now, let's get some of the players in this so they don't hear about this kind of a problem for the first time in their committee in April of the year in which the legislature is going on. So my advice, Chief, would be I think the Indigent Defense Commission does wonderful work. I think it should continue to be a part of Nevada's criminal justice system. I think we need to integrate it with legislative and political players that sit in Carson City, as well as meaningful representatives of the governor's office, people who actually know how the governor, going forward, wants to spend his or her money in his or her budget. I think that's one way we can really go the next time around and have the merits of the argument presented to a panel, a hearing body, whatever you want to call this deliberative body that makes the decision, aware of the merits and not just cynical about the request. So, you know, that would be my suggestion as we go forward. And again, I really would like to thank you, Chief, for the hard work that you put in this. John McCormick, thank you very much. And all of the rural judges that helped me on this. And most importantly, thank you very much, David Carroll and the Sixth Amendment Center.
I don't know. It's hard for me to respond to this. All I can say is that at this point is I like to compare Karen's salary to Phil Cohn's salary or Chris Lawley's salary. I mean, our state employees get screwed every day because there's a misunderstanding over at the legislature. And I can just tell you, I was blowing a lot of smoke to Ben and to Hardesty and to until I started to try to do it. And you go over there and you talk to people and they say, oh, that sounds good, whether it be the pay bill, our people here are the lowest paid of all the government people. Karen, she's got no budget increase. It's people like Jeff Wells and the folks at Washoe who made all this possible. But for Jeff Wells and pushing it through that Phil Koch can make what he makes and his deputies can make what they make. Believe me, I looked at the retirement of people who were public defenders when I was a public defender in the 70s, and my God, they were retiring in their 50s and making a fortune. I mean, it's incredible what the Clark County and Washoe County has been able to do. It's a shame the world's never had the opportunity because they don't have the money that the counties do. But the counties have stepped in. We warned the state. State to state. No, you have the obligation. Dean Carroll tells you have the obligation. Courts tell you have an obligation. and they're listening. And they don't really understand, John. I wish I could have a commission like Hardesty had, but he's even had trouble. You know, his most success can be the guardianship. Of course, it made the front page of the paper. But we made the front page of the paper, too, with Bill Kephart this week, in case you didn't see it. Some guy did 20 years because engine defense failed, Steve, so I'm trying to get him apart.
Don't believe everything you read in Vanity Fair, just so you know. Just for the record, don't believe everything you read in Vanity Fair.
Well, I think I can respond to that. I think you can read. I think you can believe everything you read in Vanity Fair since Mr. Steese was in the office while I was there. And that article was spot on, notwithstanding my good friend Chris Lawley's position. And I encourage everybody to read it. The only reason I didn't bring it up is I didn't want to pick the scab with Chris. But since you did, Chief.
When I was a baby public defender, I represented a guy named Tom Raisbeck, who time and time again was denied his rights. He did 15 years in prison. And I got him out because the trial attorney forgot to let the DA know or the judge know that he had mental problems. And, you know, this happens. You see these injustices. And meanwhile, our constituency are people who are charged with crimes. That's the problem. We don't have a constituency. I watched the ESA hearing that they had a couple nights ago. They went for 2 hours with the teachers coming forward and the students coming forward and the parents. It's a much bigger deal. And don't forget, it's May 31st today. It's June 1st tomorrow. They're supposed to quit next Monday. And they haven't resolved the many, many issues. We just found out we're still unable to pay our people what they deserve. I know Karen's got the same problem. You're going to be overworked. People don't stay at the public defender and stay public defender. They'd rather be a Washoe public defender or a Clark County public defender or go with Jen Lunt or go with Dave Sheik. My God, the difference in salaries are incredible. I don't know what to do. I was going to come in today and say, I want to thank you all, but to tell you the truth, I've got better things to do in life than keep on trying to do this. But I want to finish with Hans Project. He's a dedicated person. I want to get his information. I want to talk to Dave Carroll to see what we can do with these caseload standards. And I know that it's really up to ACLU or anybody else if they want to do more than what we're doing right now. We'll continue with the Injured Defense Commission. I'm hoping that I maybe get some advice from some of you as to how we can mild this more towards what we were trying to accomplish with SB 377. I don't know. Does anybody have any ideas as to, Dave Carroll, I'm looking to you. How do we take this commission at least survive for the next couple of years until maybe we can get Governor Sisolak or somebody, one of the progressives to make? Because I want this commission to know that elections matter.
Well, I think there's really only two options: either just disband and let the lawsuit, you know, get filed and proceed, and just whatever happens. That obviously isn't my preference. I always believe it's better to do things legislatively, but I think the only option is the one that John Lambros proposes, and that's to make this task force or a legislative task force a three-branch government task force that involves the legislative and the executive branches, because the difference between Idaho and Utah and Michigan and some of the states that have moved forward has been that the legislative and executive branch has been a partner in the research and education of the issues. And I think that is the biggest problem in your state, is that we are trying to educate those people at the last second instead of doing it through the process. So if this is going to continue, it has to involve all three branches. And if that's not possible for political or other reasons, I would suggest we just let the litigators do what the litigators do.
This is Franny. The litigators are going to do it no matter what you do, or we do. My suggestion, Chief Justice, is that the next meeting, that we set a next meeting, and we call it a planning session, and we look at this and say, are there some limited things that this commission can do? I'm thinking, for instance, of the fact that we've got a Supreme Court order that says there shall be no flat fee contracts. Well, if there aren't flat fee contracts, you could tell that to some of the contract lawyers out in the rurals, and they don't know that. They think their contracts are flat fee. So there's flat fee contracts. There are conformance with the local plans. We've done nothing with that, and we should talk about that. Should we and talk about forming a newly melded group now, not waiting too long, because it would take a while. You're talking 2 years to get something in front of the legislature, but basically set a planning meeting for what things this commission, as it exists, whether it's melded or not, can do, or maybe it's this commission does it, and this separate task force is basically a legislative type task force, but make those decisions in a meeting that's set aside to do that.
Well, I certainly want to follow through with the meeting in September. I'm going to have Jamie start looking for some dates in September for our next meeting, and then even have one before the end of the year, and then continue as long as I'm still on the court. I won't be Chief Justice in 18, but Michael Douglas will be Chief Justice, and he's much in favor of reform of the criminal process. He's working very hard with the public defenders and DAs on trying to get some rules of criminal procedure for this state uniform. One of the things, Brandy, that bothers me is I understand that David Carroll was able to convince the counties, the NACO, that they don't do flat fee contracts anymore. In other words, it's flat fee, but if you want extraordinary fees, nobody gets denied. Is that true? Come on.
That's not what the lawyers think. I've been talking to the lawyers, and that's not what they think. Many lawyers that I've talked to, and it's not a huge number, but it's in key counties, that I've talked to have said, no, this is a flat fee contract. I'm not going to get additional money additional time. I get what I get. The only thing that they might say is, well, you don't have to pay for your own investigator. So to the extent that it's not a flat fee contract because you don't have to come out of your own pocket for an investigator or for experts, then if that's what not a flat fee contract means, then we have no flat fee contracts. But there's actually contracts out there that are flat fee. You read them, and they're flat fee.
As long as we're going to meet probably in September, that's John McCormick, because nobody has a better relationship with the rules than John. Could you get some information on whether it's that Brandy's completely right, I'm completely right, or both of us are completely wrong? In other words, I understand. My understanding was that you could. It's a flat fee contract, but it's a monthly contract. But if you need to go to trial, and you're able to get like Jeff Wells does, and Drew Christensen does, and Bob Bell does in Washington Clark, where you get hourly. There's a point where you get hourly.
That is not what is going on.
Extraordinary fees.
Well, I will tell you, in Douglas County, I've never seen an instance where any request for fees beyond the contract was denied. And the attorneys here are certainly aware that they have that right and that's what's in the contract, and I've never seen it denied.
What do you mean by that? In other words, are able to get extraordinary fees or not able to get extraordinary fees?
They are. They're able to. All they have to do is ask the court for extraordinary fees. And again, I have never seen an order that denied that.
All right,
it's granted every time.
There's only 15 rural judges, and we just talked to one, so that's 14. So, John, we got to talk to 14 judges to find out what's going on. And then we'll know by our next meeting when Jamie sets it up in September. We'll know where we are with that. And I'm certainly willing to do a task force. And, Jamie, we're going to trim this commission a bit. There's a lot of people who have been appointed that really don't want to participate. I want to keep active. I want to keep rural judges and DAs involved in this. So we didn't have them originally, and that screwed up everything. So I want to keep Chris involved, and I'm going to keep Chris Hicks involved. Anybody that is in law enforcement that has been with us, I definitely want the counties involved with Jeff and anybody from Washoe and anybody from Joni and the rest from the rurals. So that's what we'll be working on. We'll start our task force. I'll let Ben worry about 2019 because I'm going to be a senior judge in 2019, not have this brief. Go back to the trial court.
Chief Justice Cherry. Chief Justice Cherry. This is John Lambrose. I would just like to urge you then, as the Chief Justice of the Nevada Supreme Court and the head of the judiciary in Nevada, to invite at least one important rural county legislator to the next meeting. And one suggestion that comes to mind would be Senator Goicoechea, whose constituency runs a broad spectrum of rural county residents of Nevada. And any other rural county assembly person or senator that John McCormick might think appropriate because of John's experience with the rural county judges. And I think that would be, because, you know, it was wonderful having NATO, or excuse me, NATO.
Trumpian. It's
obsolete. Trumpian slip there. NACO. It was wonderful having NACO involved in this. And I went to two of NACO's annual meetings and was very, very impressed with how hard NACO works for their respective counties. But NACO is not as powerful a player every 2 years as the actual people who vote on legislation. So I really think it would be important, again, not to minimize your role in this process, Chief, for you to invite those players who are in another branch of government, but a very important branch of government because they hold the purse strings, to come in and get acquainted with what we've been doing the last 10 years to try to help, at least in our humble opinions, what we as a committee, a commission, and what your court as a Supreme Court in orders, previous orders, have found to be serious deficiencies in the way that indigent defense is delivered in counties under 100,000 in population that don't have the state public defender representing their indigent arrested people. So I would urge you to do that, Chief, and have anybody that can come to the next meeting.
We'll do that.
Chief Justice Terry, this is Judge Mike Montero, and I've been on the phone for the last 55 minutes. I just joined the call after the roll call, so I just wanted the record to reflect that I was present.
Mike, what about in your judicial district, as far as fees for the contract attorneys are for, how do you do with people, whether it's conflicts or whatever, as far as fees,
We don't have contract attorneys. We have a county public defender's office. We now have a county alternative public defender's office. And then occasionally conflict attorneys will be appointed and paid hourly. We have no contracts.
Okay, so that takes care of another judge that says that there's no flat fee contract. If you get paid hourly, it's certainly not flat fee. Is it an amount that they can get, or is there a ceiling on that?
Not that I've ever been aware of, and I'm the one that signs those vouchers for them. So,
well, keep on signing. Now you only have 13 judges to talk to.
Justice, yes. I think we previously have received all of the contract attorneys' contracts from each of the rurals. And I believe most of them, if not all of them, had language in there to get extraordinary fees. But I think it needs to review maybe some of the smaller county contracts like Esmeralda maybe and Mineral to see if they have the extraordinary fees. But most of the counties have the extraordinary fees for experts. Things like that.
Well, the nice thing about John's new position is that as also facilities manager, we haven't had any air conditioning here. So, plus, he's running over the legislature. So, I think after June 5th, if there's no special session, then he'll be able to get the information that we need. If anybody else needs other information, just shoot me an email, and I'll confer with John on this.
Well, I think there's an important issue that Franny raised, and I think that what she said is really important, that about the rural attorneys that she talked to who think that they have some flat fee contract. And my question, Franny, would be whether that's their interpretation of the contract or whether they feel bullied by the judges. Are they intimidated by the local judges to ask for more money?
And I thank you.
Separate problem.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because I do think that may well be. I'm going to look again at Nye County's contract, but when I looked at it the last time, I couldn't find the extraordinary fees provision, and I know when I talked to lawyers up there, they've never asked for it, extraordinary fees. So it's not the experts and the investigators again. It's whether or not if you go to trial, you can get additional fees. And I think even though there may be a provision in the contract, the question would be, is anybody asking? If they're going to trial, now some of these counties, they don't go to trial too much, but if they go to trial, is anybody asking for fees? If they're not asking, I'm not sure it's because the lawyer wants to give away pro bono time. So...
Yeah, it just may be that, you know, there are maybe some judges who have intimidated them or told them no enough that they just feel like, well, it's pointless. I mean, I don't know, but you certainly made me wonder.
We have Jeff Fontaine with us who's sitting there where we can't be seen. And if he come on, is there anything you want to add as to what's going on with your folks?
Why don't you come over?
Come over and sit next to me. Get next to the
chief. Now I'm intimidated.
Give us some input on what's happening. And thank you for having me.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Well, first of all, on the flat fee contract issue, I'm pretty certain that all our counties are aware that they're prohibited, and I think the issue may be more along the lines of whether or not the contract attorneys are actually requesting those additional fees. And I can't say that I've reviewed every county's contract, or at least the most recent contracts, because they are renewed, at least some cases annually, in some cases every 2 years. But the ones that I did review, including even some of the really smaller counties, did have a provision there for extraordinary fees. So I think the word is out. I think they're aware of that prohibition. With regard to SB 377, the first thing I want to do is, along with the other folks who have expressed their appreciation to you, Chief Justice, and Ben, and John, and everyone at this table, especially David Carroll, we worked a lot of hours with David to try to come to agreement on language that we could get our counties to agree to, and certainly was pushed back from the district attorneys, from some of the county public defenders, and you know we understand the concerns there, and ultimately a few of our counties. And you know the issue is we always believed that they go, at least on issues of this magnitude, that we really needed to have total consensus on moving forward with a bill of such ramifications. And ultimately, we have counties who believe that as long as they're paying the majority of the cost, that they should be able to decide, not decide, but should be able to control their own destiny. They didn't feel the need for a separate commission telling them that they needed to meet certain standards because they believed that they were doing that. And ultimately, I think the other sort of impediment here, and I think someone alluded to this, is they didn't trust the state, they didn't trust the legislature, they didn't trust the executive branch in upholding their end of the bargain, which is, sure, you know, maybe we'll pass 377 and we'll appropriate $1 million, $1.2 million to set up the commission and allow counties to opt in, but then, you know, as soon as time to get a tough next session, the state backs out, and it's not like it's unprecedented that that's a system that has set up in the past in any one of a number of areas, and the state just gradually backs out. In fact, the state public defender's office is an example that's most often cited in that regard. So, you know, we are disappointed as well. We thought we had a rare opportunity to make some inroads here, and quite frankly, well, first of all, we met with every member of both judiciary committees to explain the situation. I'm pretty certain that every member that we talked to understood the issue pretty well, but at the end of the day, it comes down to politics and money. And so I think we've got to sort of retreat and figure out what the next step forward is. And, you know, I think as others have alluded to, without support from the executive branch, it's extremely impossible to get the legislature appropriate money that's not in the budget. So, NACO is, and I'm personally very much invested in this
state of the national podcast.
If we're invited to be absolutely a member, absolutely. We want to see this succeed. It's not getting any better, and you know, we see what's going on in the rest of the country, and more importantly, we believe in a need to have a system that works for everybody.
Well, Well, thank you for all your support. And ECHO in 15 and 17, God bless to your group. It's been wonderful to me as a justice and as chief justice. Thank you, John. Thank you so much. Any other comments from anybody on any of these issues? We're looking for suggestions. I know that we'll start. If you have some issues that we think will be helpful, I think that Jeff's information is very, very helpful as to what's happening. We tried hard. I mean, my heart's broken with this. I was hoping that today would just be like a celebration, that I'd be called over to the governor's office to watch the signing. But we haven't been called over on anything today. not any issue. And we thought this was the legislature that we said to ourselves, I said this with Jim and Ben and John, if we can't get it on with this group, we'll never get it on. Well, who knows? You know, 18 will be, we'll see what happens in 18, who we're going to be dealing with in 19. And we're ready to go. We'll see what we can do.
Chief Justice?
Any others?
This is Franny. It seems to me that we're talking about two different meetings, because the meeting where we invite legislators and that kind of thing feels like that should be a separate meeting than the sort of general meeting that we have with this current commission.
Well, that's what I thought we'd do in September, just have a brain session, and then because I can do another quick meeting before the end of the year where I have Phil and Jen and everybody else testify as to what's going on with Drew and Bob Bell. We can always do that another time, and Karen. This meeting will be strictly a brainstorming session.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
I'll look for some dates. Karen, Tammy will get some dates out. We'll pick something. We got to watch out for some holidays and stuff for me. So, but we'll figure out what to do. Any other information you want from John McCormick, Ben, myself, or Jeff, or our state public defender folks?
Hopefully one of the agenda items will be the status of litigation.
Well, I can't say anything, Brady, but...
I know. Don't.
I'm ready to have the deposition taken. I haven't had one taken in a long time. Since I bought a tax shelter that wasn't in non-existence. Any other information? Anybody? Is there any public comment? I know I skipped that the first part. Is there anybody from the public that wants to come in? All right. Well, we'll see what happens in the next couple of days with our friends over at the legislature. And I want to thank everybody for your participation today. We'll be in touch as to our date in September. And John will have a report for us. Hans will follow through with more information on caseload statistics. And we'll go from there. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
After Hans kills it, I didn't want to.